Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, your host, Yudalee Wickham Ashby. And today, I'm especially pleased to have Yasmin Vlahakis to share about special needs education and her own vision for persons, or rather children, with disabilities in Barbados. Welcome to the program, Yasmin.
Thank you, and good morning.
It's really good to reconnect with you as old school girls from St. Gabriel's School and to see the tremendous work that you have done through the schoolhouse in Britain's Hill, St. Michael. Tell us, where did the vision for you to start the schoolhouse came from?
Well, likewise, Yuladine, former St. Gabriel's girls, I think I have to say that our exposure to special education really began at St. Gabriel's, because it was always considered a school that was very inclusive, as you would probably remember.
Quite
agree. And so from very young children, we always had special needs students as part of our day-to-day school life. And then obviously, as we became adults and one starts to think about our careers, I always had a tendency to gravitate towards young children and ended up going off to the UK, where I studied early childhood education. While pursuing that goal, I found that I became particularly curious and very interested in finding out a bit more about children with special education needs. And then I developed my journey in that avenue.
Nice.
After I graduated from Chiltern College in Reading in the UK, I worked in England for a short period of time and then eventually moved to the US and then forwarded on to Zimbabwe, where my career really took off in special education. So while in Zimbabwe, I lived there for approximately 8 years or so. I worked in a special education medical rehabilitation center. And that's when I really, really realized that this was a field that I was particularly interested in. That happened over a period of years while in Zimbabwe. And then when I moved back to Barbados in the late 80s, I tried to merge mainstream and special needs through the format of a preschool. To be quite fair, I don't think people were quite ready for that. Parents of mainstream children are very uncomfortable, you know, with their little ones being exposed to special needs. And I'm talking about in the late 80s or so, early 90s. So that did not go very well. And after a period of time, I ended up closing that preschool and then took up my employment at the St. Angela's School. And I was in charge of special education in the infants department. So that's where my journey in special education really took root in Barbados.
Wonderful. That's really a fabulous journey. And I hope that you will put it in writing so that we can read more about your journey and your commitment to children with disabilities. Now, Yasmin, you came back to Barbados. And as you said, back in the 80s, people were very uncomfortable with the concept of children with disabilities being included in mainstream. And, you know, how much do you think that has changed now in the 21st century?
To be fair, I think it is slowly changing, but I think it will always be something that lurks in the background. Personally, I do think that it's ideal when children with special needs have their own space to call their own. And when I say that, I'm thinking in terms of obviously the way they learn within the mainstream classroom setting. They're going to need more time. They're going to need more support. Some schools do have aides working with individual children. And as you know, if you're going to have an aide in addition to the class teacher, there's an extra cost to that. And it can become quite prohibitive for some families. But even from a social aspect, I do think that we learn more and more that children with special needs will eventually become adults and young people with special needs. And we need to be cognizant of that and to create spaces that they can call their own, communities that become theirs, obviously with the support and the transitioning from one to the other of mainstream. But I do think that it has changed slightly, but not much, I have to say. And I think this is something that may evolve. But ultimately, my ultimate point that I want to make is that I think we have to give this group a community that they can call their own and that it can be developed based on their individual needs, their goals, and their ambitions for themselves as functioning members of our Barbadian society.
So Yasmin, that's an excellent point. And I want you to expand a bit more and share, how do you think more of this can be facilitated? You're starting with the schoolhouse, and we have other schools and other entities that can lend to this concept and really give tremendous support to both the child and the young adult as they walk through the stages of childhood, teenage years, into young adulthood, into maturity. How do you think we can lend that level of support?
Well, I think it has to start with the parents, and for parents to recognize that, okay, I have a child with a particular developmental or educational challenge, and that is a reality that we are faced with. My next step would be as a parent, okay, how do I prepare this child to function and to live in our society? So taking that child to church, making sure that my family understands, you know, my child's needs, exposing them to family members in a social setting. And I mentioned church. They need to go to church with mommy and daddy and have that fellowship of a church-based environment. I think that really does go across the board for everybody. As you would remember, we were very much raised in the church at St. Gabriel's. That was an important part of our daily life every day.
Yes.
We're losing that, but the church in itself is a community. We need to think of them in terms of how do we get them to a place where they can socialize and be comfortable. So rather than leaving them out of certain activities, find ways that we can incorporate them. So if you're going on a picnic, make sure that if we are having an island tour or something, that we incorporate buses that have wheelchair access so that they can be part of the trip as well and get to see, you know, the sights of Barbados if that is an outing that you're doing. Another thing which I think is important that we could do is to have social events based on their needs. So they can have, you know, like a lunch or go to the cinema, or even as they become young adults, you know, to plan maybe like a party. Let me use the Barbadian term, like a fete that is based on special education. So they will have disco music, they can dance, so that it's all geared to them, but obviously very well monitored and planned by the adults who will be the ones overseeing it all. But I do think that we need to start at the very basic level of inclusion, socially and spiritually, and all the other aspects that make us all up as human beings living and functioning in this common space.
And these are some wonderful ideas. And I know that some families who are very supportive of their member with a disability seek to do some of these and other events, as you have suggested. How then do we treat to the family who are not as supportive? How can we encourage them to think more of that child and of the members as a unit, as a family, and build or strengthen that family?
I think all of that stems from really education. Obviously, we need to have more exposure, you know, maybe information that might go out on an organ through a medium like GIS, those kinds of programs where, you know, there's that information coming to the public. So they become an awareness program, perhaps. And also, if they see it in action, then they would realize, oh, I want to be part of that too. But if they're not seeing it or they're not being invited, they may not even know that these services may actually be available and be open to them as well. So I think there's some There's some efforts being made, I know, to start this ball rolling, but I think with the right exposure and public information, I think we will get the message across. Well, I'm hopeful anyway.
Yes, we are. We are. And as you said earlier, slowly it's beginning to impact. I know one of the things that I do is I organize towards the month end a family picnic. Mm-hmm. And I reach out to others so that, like you said, you know, a family that is supportive will maybe organize their family picnic or some other family gathering and include their member with a disability. And for individuals, other individuals who recognize that there is a member with a disability in a family, maybe in their neighborhood, maybe within their church group, or wherever they are, and they know of an individual, they can reach out and invite that same family, or if not the entire family, maybe the member with a disability and another member from that family, so that you're helping to strengthen the family relations and at the same time help with developing the social skills of those individuals and helping them to feel as though they are a part of the community, that someone else besides the family cares.
Yes, absolutely. I agree for sure.
Okay, so Yasmin, tell us about the school house and the type of services you offer.
Okay, so the school house is a small school. We were established in 2006. I started the school at my home in Rockley with a small group of children. There were four preteens who had outgrown the mainstream schools that they were attending. These were mainstream schools with a special needs annex to it. So they came to me at my home, and the school has grown over the years, catering to a range of students, typically students with things like developmental challenges, Down syndrome, dyslexia, some students with mild to moderate autism. We have a couple of children in the past with mild to moderate cerebral palsy, just to give an idea of the kinds of students we cater to. What else can I say about us? So generally, we use the Ministry of Education's mandated curriculum. And what we do with that is that we take this curriculum and we tweak it to suit the operating levels of the students in our classes. So we're still getting the general gist of the information over to them, but obviously it has to be shared to them in a manner that they can digest and that they will understand and hopefully will make a good, successful end of it. Over the years, we have used our platform of special education to vary the needs of our students in terms of what are we offering to them. So as I spoke earlier about the social aspects, we make sure that our students go on frequent field trips to places of interest. And obviously, apart from exposing them to things of interest, we want to give them that opportunity to have the social interaction with each other. You know, we can't just operate in a vacuum in a classroom. The classroom is all around us in everything that we do every day. So socially, we take them out so that they can use the social skills that we are sharing with them. You know, they go to restaurants, and not just fast food restaurants. We take them to fine dining places where they have to read a menu. They have to interact with a waiter, place an order. We encourage them to work out what they have to pay. And we do this with the supermarket as well. Those types of things. Art is a very big component of our school. We have an art studio. So our students are exposed to using a variety of mediums. We do a lot of work with acrylics. We do things with collaging and so on. So we're trying to create a space that as they develop and become adults, this art studio and cottage industry is where our young adults go and operate. And they create some amazing works of art, which we then sell and reproduce on mugs and bags and cards and so on. And it creates a space that they feel as if they're coming to work. So they're what we consider to be our apprentices. They come to work and they create and they earn from the sale of these pieces that we sell. So that's our top end. And then as we spoke about, the middle and the beginning are the ones who are now starting that journey of education where we are teaching the three R's. And as I highlighted earlier, we are using the Ministry of Education's curriculum, which we then break down and serve to them in a manner that they can cope and operate from.
Fabulous. This is some extremely wonderful work that you are doing at the schoolhouse. And it certainly will give parents and caregivers that sense of hope that, yes, my child with a disability, my grandchild with a disability, my nephew, my niece, my cousin has a space where they can learn at their pace and at the same time use the education, use the training to be of benefit to them. So this is great. And at the same time, developing social skills that we all need to survive in this society. I know one of the points that persons often ask is whether the special needs school utilize the individual education plan for their students. Is this part of your training as well?
Yes, it is. We do have IEPs or individual education plans. These are typically used for our younger students. And these really are what I consider to be like a roadmap to how we are going to plan out the education for this particular child. In this plan, we also incorporate any work that they're doing with their speech therapist, occupational therapist, and so on, physical therapist if they're involved. This plan really helps the therapist, helps the teachers, and of course, help the caregivers and the parents to have a formulated plan as to how this student or child is going to develop. What are the key areas in their lives that we need to work on? And of course, as you master each step, then you go on to the next and the next and the next. Of course, you have to be reinforcing as you go along. So when they've mastered something, you still need to come back and keep, you know, not serving it to them every single day, but you have to keep reminding them just to make sure that they haven't forgotten. So as you're going forward, you're doing really checks and balances as we make our way through the IEP. So that is a very, very important key aspect of our daily function here at the schoolhouse.
I personally like the IEP concept and methodology. Do you think this is a concept that should be utilized more extensively within our educational system?
Yes, I definitely would say so. I'm not sure, are you referring to mainstream as well, or you're just...
Yes, mainstream as well, mainstream as well. Do you think it might be a bit more difficult to incorporate mainstream?
Well, remember that within mainstream, they have various testing that they do at various stages. I am not very au fait with the general routine of a mainstream class and what their requirements are, but I guess it can be adapted to suit mainstream in some form or fashion.
Okay, right. So let's get back now to the special needs education and the wonderful work that you do at the schoolhouse. Again, you would have parents who are keen to have their children develop and, you know, become independent or as independent as possible in their adulthood. Let's talk now to the parents who may be having the challenges of how do I get my child into school? Is there any specific requirements you have of the child? Because sometimes you hear the comments that some children are unable to get into primary school because they're not potty trained or they're not verbal, they're nonverbal. Do you have any specific requirements of your children to enter?
Yes. Well, let me begin by saying it is always best. Parents will notice that your child is not reaching certain milestones as they are developing. And I will encourage parents, when you notice these things, don't hide from it. Seek out professional help, because I think the sooner you get an idea of what the challenge may be, then you are better able to, you know, set the child in the right direction that it needs to go to address some of these things. You know, they talk about early intervention. I mean, you can't get any better than that. So you need to have your child tested by an educational psychologist, and there are people available to do that. It's also available through the Ministry of Education. Granted, there might be some long waiting lists to have access to these services, but they are there. So you need to speak to the people in those day nurseries. You need to speak to the nursery school teachers and so on, to just, you know, keep that level of communication open, so you can then set out on this journey in an informed manner. It would be ideal if we had a report from a professional who has identified the area of difficulty that the child is having. Next, potty training. So in our school, in the past, we were not taking students who were not potty trained. We had one or two who came in with personal aids. They will see to their toileting during the course of the day. But now the schoolhouse in September, in a couple of weeks, we will be opening our first nursery class. We're actually opening a kindergarten. We are accepting children in our kindergarten who are not potty trained. So part of their learning every day will be how to use the bathroom properly. And of course, this is a first for us because we've never done it. So I know that some schools shy away from it because they don't have the personnel. You know, teachers can't leave the classroom to take little ones to the bathroom. So I think that might have been where that difficulty may have come. But in our case, we are addressing that now because we're now offering this facility to the public, a kindergarten accepting students who are not potty trained.
Well, Yasmin, that is, again, good news, because I know some parents are really frustrated at being rejected because the child is not potty trained. And that you correctly said, some parents do need that support to help train the child in doing several tasks that they can achieve the developmental goals. Maybe not at the particular time frame, but certainly once they're able to achieve these developmental goals, that is still a major achievement. So as you talk about the nursery and you identify that you now have staff who will be able to work with the young ones in helping to be potty trained and learn how to use the bathroom correctly, speak to us about your staffing and the type of qualities and skills that they are bringing to the schoolhouse and to the children who are attending your school.
So we have a full staff complement, and I must add that they're all quite youthful members of our team. I am the lead person, so I no longer teach anymore. My job really is to keep the school operating, work on things like curriculum development, and make sure that everything is running smoothly and that everybody is happy and that our students are achieving and working towards all their various goals. The staff range, some of them are graduates of the Erdiston Training College, and some of them are graduates of the UWI. They bring a range of knowledge to our school, but most importantly, apart from their academic qualifications, I think it is important to have staff who are caring, who are devoted, who are loving and patient and tolerant. If you don't have those human qualities to translate to your students, then I think you're in the wrong job. Special education is not a glamorous job, and it is not a job that pays big salaries. So if you're doing it because you think, oh, well, it's a paycheck, then you're in it for the wrong reason. You have to choose this job because you care and you want to help and you want to make a difference in the lives of your students and obviously to be helpful to their parents and their caregivers. So that is the type of person I look for when I select my staff members.
Wonderful. And that is critical to the development of our children with disabilities and children generally, though. That is necessary. Now, one of the major discussions right now is educational reform. What are some of your thoughts as it relates to positive changes for the enhancement of the education of our children in special needs? What would you want to propose could be some future changes?
I would say that early testing, I think the ability to have testing at an early stage in the student's career is going to be key. And that is across the board. Maybe early screening for everybody because, you know, we're seeing a lot of children who, quote unquote, are functioning, and I use that very guardedly, in a normal setting. But when you dig deep below the surface, you see that there are early things that are missing. And these things are missing from the inception when they go to maybe the day nursery and the nursery school. And then they enter into the infant's classes. You know, simple things like recognizing colors and shapes and letters and be able to recognize their names and so on. I've had a lot of interest recently from parents who have children who are not doing what I just described. And so they continue to go through the school system and they're not learning anything. They're really just occupying a space within a classroom. So I think to be able to identify the weaknesses, the challenges, and obviously then steering them in the direction that they need to go. I think that would be my hope, that that aspect of the development of curriculum going forward would be early screening for learning deficits that may exist in our students.
Right. And I believe because of early screening, that would then allow for greater planning in relation to the types of IEPs or teacher training, all the areas that are also necessary to support the child with these deficits.
I agree. Absolutely. That was very well put.
Thank you. Now, Yasmin, what's your vision for the schoolhouse, maybe within the next 3 to 5 years?
Within our next 3 to 5 years, well, I have been working steadily on achieving, as you know, I'm getting on in age. I don't know how much I see them reviewing the retirement age, but we just acquired our own transport, by the way. I didn't mention that we have our own bus now. So we pick up all of our students who need transport to keep them off the public bus system. We have our own schoolhouse van that takes our kids to and from school and all their activities. So I have set these goals, like the acquisition of that van, the expansion of our offerings, like the kindergarten. We have just expanded and created another classroom space. So we've added on 2 more buildings to what we have here on our schoolhouse plant. It really is just to continue on this path, to continue to build what we have, to make it better, to be able to offer better services, to make sure that schoolhouse has longevity. Because a lot of the time, you know, people start these things and then as they get older and they retire, we have to have proper succession plans in place. So I'm working on a succession plan that is sustainable and that will live up to the values and the goals and the vision that I have built this school with as I came through this journey over the last 16, going into 17 years. It is not easy because the cost of living is so expensive. And obviously you want to be able to develop and grow and offer all these things, but you have to also be looking at cost. And that could be a bit of a challenge along the way. But you have to have faith and keep going forward. You can't let things deter you from achieving your goals. And that's how I live my life. Planning and stepping one day at a time, 1 foot in front of the other, and you'll get there.
Of course. And I must commend you and congratulate you for the tremendous work you have done through the schoolhouse as you reach out to another section in our population who need the vital support that you are providing. Now, as we wrap up, Yasmin, I just want to ask you to share one memory, one outstanding, warm, wonderful memory of your experience at the schoolhouse.
Oh God, I have so many. I think what is most delightful about the school is that we have children from all walks of life. It's not just a school for the families who live in the Heights and the Terraces. I have children who come to the school whose parents are not working and whose home environment is not the most glamorous. But what I find is the most endearing about all of my students is that we don't see class or color or social status. We all live together in such harmony, and they're all so loving towards each other and towards our teachers. And that feeling of coming to school every day and feeling love, there's an atmosphere of just happiness and peacefulness here. And I think that in itself makes our job and our life at the schoolhouse so meaningful. I think I will carry that with me for the rest of my life, as long as I am still lucid.
Well, I think, Yasmin, you have been able to transfer what you were taught at St. Gabriel's and the type of atmosphere that permeated at St. Gabriel's School into the schoolhouse. And I want to, again, really compliment you for a fabulous job, a splendid job that is appreciated not only by your students and their families, but the society as it relates to embracing persons with disabilities. So I say thank you and a fabulous job.
Thank you too for having me. This has been a wonderful opportunity, and I hope that Barbadians will hear this information and be encouraged and to have hope that there is help out there. You just have to access it.
Well said, Yasmin. I have been talking with Yasmin Vlahakis from the schoolhouse. You have been listening to Vigilance with me, Yudalee Wickham-Ashby. Remember, you can reach me on 1-246-269-9660 or via Starcom at 1-246-430-7300. And you can email us, vigilancebarbados@gmail.com. And of course, you can check this and past episodes by going to the VOB 92.9 FM website to look for Visions. I just want to encourage you to love yourself and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Ciao.